Where did ye art go?
Home forever, hopefully.
I'm gonna miss his glazed over stare and his weird drooling, quivering bottom lip.
I'm not going to miss him just staring and doing nothing. Just the stare, like the darkness of the void.
Just overtaking him forever.
Oh. Well, let's hope he never comes back, because he was creepy.
Well, maybe next week. Maybe next week.
We'll see.
So, hello, Grumpy Dungeon Master Jay.
Hello, Grumpy Dungeon Master Christopher.
What are you doing today?
Actually, I was sitting here reading a PC Gamer article about a guy who played through Skyrim and only used illusion magic.
Yeah, it's possible. Slow, but possible.
No armor, no weapons, no punching, no other spells except illusion magic. And mind you, I don't know, man. Like, how do you even kill anyone? I'm only on the fourth page of this. I don't know how many pages or how long this thing goes on.
I'm pretty sure, unlike D&D illusion spells, which only like create harmless effects, I'm pretty sure you can create illusionary things that will attack and stuff.
Maybe. It's been so long since I've played Skyrim. I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm looking for the spell list.
Yeah, in the beginning, when he first started this thing out, like I said, I'm at the beginning of this article, kind of.
Yeah.
There was two methods he was using to sort of kill things. One was he would, train them to the guards or towards other people and get them to kill them for him, which is smart, and that's kind of what you do in the game anyway. And the other thing was if he had two people, he could cast Fury on one of them and let them fight. Because Fury, it basically pisses them off and they attack the nearest thing.
Yeah, and that only works for a certain level and becomes Frenzy. And then I think there's Hysteria. No, Mayhem is where up to level 25. So he had to keep his level low to keep the monster level low.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, just probably use Mayhem and probably Invisibility and kind of just, like, sneak around and do stuff, which I think is possible.
I don't know how possible it is. Killing the dragon at the end? Probably not. Oh, yeah, for spoilers. Hashtag spoilers for fuckers who haven't played Skyrim yet, even though it's been out for a decade. It's... You got to fight that dragon at the end. Unless you can do damage, I don't see that working. Unless maybe he trains it on some guard somewhere who can kill this thing.
Oh, only 10. It came out November 11th, 2011.
Yeah, like I said, it was about a decade.
Hey, without looking it up, what Legend of Zelda game came out 20 years ago?
Oh, I've heard this one, actually. It's like Twilight Princess or some shit.
Wind Waker.
I don't know. Look, man, the last Zelda game I played was on the fucking Super Nintendo. And that was 35 years ago, 40 years ago. 30, yeah. Probably 30. It was 30 plus years ago.
Yeah, well, it was definitely a long time ago.
Yep. God, we're fucking old.
Yeah. So, I have to ask you right off the cuff, when you're DMing and you DM games, we all make mistakes. We just kind of have to roll with the punches.
I know.
I TPK'd my group kind of twice last night. Yeah. Well, one of them really wasn't like my fault. They just kind of like victim of circumstance. Like they had basically pissed off the NPC that they were doing stuff for. And she's like, here's the fucking portal. Go through it. Do your shit and come back. And they're like, well, can we wait till tomorrow when we're rested up? She's like, no, I'm just doing this or this now. Your choice. And kind of gave them an ultimatum. And they were like, okay, we got to go through. And like the party's already half dead and they're moving on to the next dungeon without any kind of rest. So now they're in the Shadowfell. And you, from a lore perspective, if you spend more than a day in the Shadowfell, you're pretty much effed. Like, yeah, you will start just losing a piece of what you are. Your life will just dissipate.
Earlier editions had a spell to counteract shit like that.
Yeah.
I don't recall what the exact name off the top of my head, but it basically made you immune to basic effects of a plane.
Right. In this case, they basically got so beat up after the first two encounters that they had to take a long rest. So they had to take a long rest in the Shadowfell. And they've been there for close to 24 hours, close enough that I made them do the wisdom save for effects in the Shadowfell. And two of them have negative effects that carry over from the Shadowfell. If you look up the in the DMG, there's actually the list. The list is only like three things long, mm-hmm. which is kind of, you know, for being in the Shadowfell, which is pretty much a place, for those who don't know, it's the domain of the dead. And there's just, it's very draining. It's very like just no color, everything just pulling out of you. You have an overwhelming sense of dread. Everybody's crazy there. Like if you were to go down an alleyway in a town and then try to go back there, that town could not be there anymore. It's a very almost ethereal place of being, and it's really cool. And they're like in the Shadowfell version of the library that they originally did the stuff so they can get the blade that they have to reforge.
Yeah, hanging out in the Shadowfell, it's like living inside of an Edward Gorey painting.
Yeah.
Drawing.
So I actually found a list of, like, the guy expanded the three that are in the DMG to, like, 12, and added things like impatience in there, because, like, you know, you start going crazy after a while. After 48 hours, you're pretty much insane, you know? Mm-hmm. Some emotion that's the only thing left of your humanity that you've latched onto is the only thing that drives you now. And even if you leave the Shadowfell, that's going to always be there as like a lingering effect that you have to like fight against. So my players got subjected to that. And you know, they're going to be able to get to the sword and they're going to be able to get out. So what happened in the final fight is it was a very high level mage and a big fighter versus the party after the long rest. And they had used a couple spell slots. They decided for the third encounter, once they did their long rest, they just decided the next encounter deserved fireballs, all the fireballs, and just fireballed the shit out of it.
Yeah.
They weren't even going to fight a monster. They're just like, you know what? We're just nuking this room from the previous room, and then we're going on to the end. And then the fight was, I thought it was a pretty good fight. And they got hit by the mage's own fireball, and then they were able to counterspell Cone of Cold, which would have really messed them up.
Yep.
The mage counterspelled haste. I forgot to shield react and stop magic missiles from hitting me, which caused the mage to pretty much get one shot, at least in a round. He went from like 70 hit points to 10.
Yeah, that's what happens. Fucking like one wizard versus a party is just not likely to work out well.
Yeah, but they had the big brute that was there, just like large kobold, pretty much was greater invisibility, and it was because I didn't shield the magic missiles is because the con save dropped. And my question to you was, do you ever forget to do things? Because I greater invis the mage later on in the fight. Mm-hmm. And they were actually able to kind of like figure out where it was and attack it square. And two of the hits happened. And I forgot the roll of con save on the invisibility and just ran away. And then it nuked the party again. There was one person left. And I kind of like, my daughter woke up and I had to kind of deal with that at the same time. But I rolled the con saves and I failed. So the invisibility would have dropped. And I did stream shenanigans to kind of let the last hit kind of go through. But I did that because I forgot to do the con save when I should have done the con save. So as a DM, what is like a common rule that you should always be doing? Do you always forget to do? Because I always forget the con saves.
Oh man. I will forget con saves. I will forget to do abilities. I will forget to cast certain spells as reactions. Like, this is all just sort of things that you do as a dungeon master. I even own a fucking t-shirt that says, I roll dice and forget things. Because that's literally what I do. I roll dice and I forget things constantly. You know, it's one of those, it's just a thing that's going to happen. Suck it up, deal with it, try your best to remember going forward.
When you do forget things or remember that you forgot things that are critical to, like, hey, if I would have remembered this, they wouldn't have TPK'd. Do you kind of like fudge your way out of that scenario like I did?
I have never, honestly, I can't think of a single time where I've killed a party of players because of something I forgot.
Okay, well, I've done that a couple times.
It almost always, when I forget, it works the other way around towards, like, harming my side and not theirs.
Okay.
Yeah, it I don't know why, but that just seems to be the case most of the time. If I forget something, it typically... there have been times where I'll forget to do some damage, and if we're still sort of in that same round of combat, I might throw in the extra damage if I don't feel like it's going to fully change the way the flow of combat. Like, if I was going to add extra damage and it's going to drop a character, then I probably am not going to do it. But if it's just going to add to the damage they've taken, I might, as long as we haven't moved too far forward into the battle.
Okay.
Like, I'm not going to backtrack a whole turn and say, oh, you were supposed to have taken this extra damage last turn. No, I just fucking forgot it. Lucky on them.
Yeah, I don't do that. Like, if I forget to do damage, I just kind of, like, whiff it 100%. But, like, in this particular scenario, it was pretty much, hey, shit, he shouldn't be visible right now. That 18 that he just rolled should have hit because he shouldn't have been invisible. And... he would have killed him because he had 2 hit points. So,
yeah,
you know, I shenanigan to free critical because you can do that on my stream. If you have enough channel points, you can turn any attack into a critical, technically any attack, even mine as the DM, but please don't. So I kind of did that with my secondary account just to kind of like end that fight because they didn't deserve the TPK there. Now the TPK, because I was like, okay, what's a spell that's as good as Fireball but necrotic, and there's a 7th level spell that's pretty much the same damage as Fireball, but it's just a massive necrotic spell. And I used that, and the Fireball would have hit everybody, and this spell definitely just hit everybody. But they were already on their last legs, and they just got people back up with all their healing spells, and it was just like, bam, nuke. There it goes. And yeah. It happens.
So are all of them dead?
No, they're not dead, actually. They miraculously all saved. Earlier in the night, they were fighting, but they were, like I said, they were on their last legs because they didn't have a rest before they came into this dungeon. And they just got beaten up by a bunch of the kobold warriors and the kobold shamans. Mm-hmm. And again, these are leveled up. For those out there who don't know, in the Owl campaign, I have what I'm calling the Bandersnatch Kobolds. And the Bandersnatch Kobolds are pretty much very kind of corrupted a little bit. And they harken back more to the first edition Kobolds, but they're kind of like scruffy looking and more dog-like than dragonoids. And it makes sense for the context of the dragon master that they serve in this case. And so they're all like CR2, and the big broody ones are like CR3.
Oh, they lift weights, bro.
They lift weights, bro. They're not small. They're all medium size. So fighting for them is a pretty big fight. You know, it's a 4 CR2 monsters. That's quite a big thing, you know?
Yep.
And we were down a player. We were down the healer specifically. The first time they pretty much just all got knocked out except for the Bladesinger mage, who is, by the way, that class is just broke, I think, in 5th edition. You think the monk's annoying? Yeah, this guy with like almost nearly infinite shields, an AC of like 27,000, and can stab you.
Yeah,
not
no,
hard, but enough.
I remember we were talking about that previously before me. I think it was us and Eric who were talking about the Blade Singer being impossible to hit.
Yeah. And then on top of that, he can just throw fireballs when he wants to. So Blade Singer is really good. If you want to play like a warlock, but you still want to be stabby, you know, or if you want to play a warlock stabby, but you don't play a warlock, play a Blade Singer. It's real good. So the Blade Singer is able to kill the shadow. And then everybody, there's no heals. Every single person saved and stabilized with their death saves. Mm-hmm. Like none of them failed all three. And then at the end of the fight, there was enough healing left in the ranger to pick up one guy stabilized. And then the other guy got stabilized by a 27 something medicine check or some junk. So they all lived. I will say though, the monk character that we got in the group, for some reason, he only has like 45 hit points at level 7.
That sounds like, exactly like Jacob.
Like, I'm not sure why it's that low. If that's maybe that's the maybe monks are supposed to be that low.
Well, no, monks get a D8 plus con bonus. Sometimes you just roll like crap.
I'm having them take the average, so.
Well, yeah, but even then, if you're just taking the average, which Jacob, that's what Jacob's been doing, because he's continuously rolled lower than the average. So I either allow them to, all of my players, they roll the dice to see how many hit points get, and if they get less than half, they take the half.
Right.
That way nobody ends up with terrible hit points. But despite that, you know, even at the level he's at, I want to say he has like 38 hit points or something at 6th, 7th level. Like maybe he might have 42 or something, but he has fucking garbage for hit points.
I think the mage has more hit points than he does at the same level, which is really weird.
I mean, if the rolls are there.
Well, like I said, they've all taken the average, so it's not like there's.
Does he have a con bonus at all?
I'm looking right now, actually, come to think of it.
Yeah, I mean.
But yeah, it was. The mage kept going down. The monk kept going down because the shadow guys would basically. It's a shadow demon, essentially.
Yeah.
And it would get behind them and had to have advantage, so I get to do the super uber damage and like 33 damage psychic. Good luck.
Yep.
Two of those, you're down. So yeah, he has the monk has plus one constitution bonus. Let's store life, full hit points. Come on. Yeah, so he has 45 hit points.
At what level?
7. Yeah, he's still 7.
Yeah,
and then
a little low.
And then the mage has 62. He has a plus 3 con bonus though.
How much con bonus did the monk have? You said
plus 1.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a big discrepancy right there. Plus 3 con bonus versus a plus 1 at level 7. That's an extra 14 hit points the mage is going to have over him.
Yeah. I didn't really think about it. I mean, just one point goes a long way after a bunch of levels.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Wow. But yeah, so yeah, they're kicking off. They're going to be given the quest to relive the last memory of the town founder where she created the blade.
So the DM resources group that we're a part of, I saw somebody post in it today or yesterday. And because you're talking about TPK and your group and all, and what they were basically saying is, if you TPK your party, do you continue the story or do you just go do something else? So if you wiped your whole party yesterday, would you have continued the owl campaign, or would you have decided, nope, that's the end of it, and then went and run some module?
I don't know. Because this is a playtest of what I'm going to be publishing, I would have continued the story. I would have just waved off the TPK, kept the same characters, and just kept on going. Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, because it's also playtest too, I know that there's a possibility of a TPK happening, you know. Yes. Maybe I designed an encounter wrong. Maybe I designed it too hard or too easy. And, you know, maybe I have too many kobolds in this room or too few. So far, I think what I've learned in writing this whole thing and planning out the encounters and everything, I definitely overstat the encounters. I think I have fewer encounters, but they're harder. So I think I have to kind of get more encounters, but make them all easier. That may be a better route to go. And that's what I'm going to test with this next dungeon, is I'm going to have a lot of smaller rooms with just like 3 or 4 different monsters and, you know, nickel and dime more than just like a hit diaper fight.
Yeah, if you're having a lot of encounters that are nickel and diming them, then you're like, I don't know how well that's going to play on stream, and it's definitely going to be more work on you.
Well, I mean, I kind of follow the same way that they write them in the campaigns, like the official ones. They always seem to kind of go more for the side of having a couple of encounters that are really hard, mm-hmm. or like, you know, above average. And that seems to be the fight, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
And I feel I follow that style because, like, you know, this next dungeon that they're going to go through has maybe 4 or 5 fights. Okay. And they're all going to be pretty substantial fights. So I thought about taking those 4 or 5 fights and making them like 10 fights that are more balanced, you know?
Yeah.
I'm on the low to medium side versus the medium to hard side with maybe 1 deadly encounter at the end, where like when I set it out this library with all the kobolds, I shot for hard for every single one. So like the average was basically 5 CR2 monsters. And that's a hard encounter for a group of five level sevens. Of course, when they went down a player, I didn't adjust. So
yeah,
that's part of it too. But, I think that maybe having more, I'm not sure which is better. It may just be a preference of the table too.
Yeah. I don't know that either one is really better.
Yeah.
It really will depend on every dungeon. You know, it'll depend on the table. It'll depend on what you prefer to run. I know that I tend to run, like, I'm just thinking, most of the time if I run a thing at night, I'll have maybe 3-4 encounters in a dungeon tops. Yeah. You know, I've done some dungeons that are ridiculous, but in general, that's 3 or 4 encounters. And the first ones are relatively easy. There might be one that's moderately difficult, and then the final one should be very difficult.
Yeah, I kind of always plan for 3 encounters, all about medium to hard difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just because CR is kind of subjective too, you know?
Yeah.
Like a really good, well-organized team that's well-equipped can just roll through hard encounters all night long. You know, I haven't really geared out this group. I guess I think it's a problem I really need to address.
Yeah, they should have some magic items by this point.
They have some. We rolled them on the table. They just didn't turn out well. I know where I'm going to place some. Plus, at the end of the day, they're getting a Vorpal sword, so it's like,
well, that's great for one person.
That's great for one person. Enjoy.
You have an entire party of 4, so.
But you know. It's something I gotta work on more, I think, just to kind of hand out better loot to the party, because I'm trying to think now what they all have. They all got a boon at the very start of the game. Then they got a magic dagger. They got a magic javelin. They got a ring of spell storing. They got the horn of blasting.
Now I have a question on the ring of spell storing, real quick. So, what What does your party put in that?
It has five slots, and I think it has three shields remaining.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to verify that your party are the same kind of assholes as my players.
How's that being an asshole?
Because all they do is put fucking shield in it.
Well, that's how I gave it to them.
Oh, okay. Fair. My players, they actually just stock the goddamn thing with shield. Because shield, yeah, it's the best spell in the game that I actually allow. As opposed to silvery barbs, which I do not.
One of the new players that came in, because he came in late, I gave him a magic item. So he has a barrier tattoo, which is cool. It works for his character. And I think they all have one magic item, whether it be a magic weapon or some kind of protective thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where me and you differ greatly.
There's magic scale mail somebody's not wearing, but it's just magic scale mail of like acid resistance. There was an opportunity to buy a bauble that emitted bright light. There was a cracked version and a non-cracked version that was offered to them. Because the shop was a hobgoblin, and there was the Feywild hobgoblin that they were going to have in the playtest. He's very, very, very shifty and was definitely swindling them for money. And if they had taken that item and activated it in the Shadowfell, it still would have emitted bright light. Okay. And that then turns off all of the abilities of all the kobolds, essentially. Because they're all, you know, when in bright light.
Yep.
Yeah. The Shadow Demon couldn't have done shit. The Shadow Hounds couldn't have done shit.
So they didn't buy it, of course.
They didn't buy it. And plus, the priest wasn't there. I don't think this priest has daylight, but the other priest they had daylight spell. That would have helped a lot, too. But maybe, I don't know, maybe...
Yeah,
maybe I'm not giving them enough like setup for things. Maybe because they're not like researching where they're about to go. But like I said, in this particular case, it was very much like just go here, shut up.
Yeah, we differ greatly when it comes to magic items, and yeah, you know, we've rehashed this enough times. I like to run super powered games, or at least higher powered games. But at the point my guys are at, and I think they're seventh level also. Every one of them has at least a rare magic item. And probably a couple uncommons.
Yeah, I definitely don't. That doesn't happen in my games.
And I'm pretty sure by the DMG, they should all have at least two uncommons or a rare by that level.
The DMG, starting between level 5 and 10, is one uncommon magic item and 500 gold. So you can buy another uncommon magic item.
Yeah, so two uncommons.
Yeah. And they're sitting about at like two or three rares and two or three uncommons.
Well, I'm talking each individual player should have that. Every single player should have at least two uncommons.
Right. Two uncommons. And was it three uncommons are rare?
No, two uncommons. Well, it depends. Majors, because there's majors and minors.
Yeah. So like I said, they have magic armor, they have magic they have the Cloak of Protection somewhere, and the Ring of Spell Storing, the Horn of Blasting. And it's not like they haven't used these magic items to full effect either.
Oh, you sure, know? Yeah. Yeah.
When they were fighting those Emerald Golems that would F them up, and they're just like
Horn of Blasting might be good there.
Hey, that encounter's over. Hey, this next five encounters all Horns of Blasting. You want to go? All right, let's just make this fast. I'm walking, blow the horn. Yeah, you blow the horn. I get it, yeah. How much damage? 45? Okay, so they're taking 90. Okay, they're dead. Okay, next encounter, a horn again? Wow, that's trippy. 175 damage this time. Okay, got it. Damn. Did it explode? No? Ah, shit. I'm really hoping the horn explodes.
Yeah, I've had it happen to me before. Not with that'd a horn, but with other magic items.
That'd be the best character death, is everyone's running away, and the last Alan stops and turns around and pulls up the horn and is like, and it explodes, but causing the huge explosion that kills everything.
Right.
And that sacrifice is like, you know, then like embossed on the wall with this owl blowing a horn and like this nuclear explosion in the far background.
You succeeded, but also failed. But succeeded. Yeah, I've blown up magic items before. We had a staff of healing. We had just gotten it, and I used all of the charges in the very first combat that we got into, and then I rolled the fucking one.
Oh, that's great.
I was like, son of a bitch. Being that we didn't have a cleric, we really kind of needed that thing.
And we needed it, we used it, and now we don't have it anymore. Yeah. That's just what happens.
All right, we're back to potions. Back to potions.
Good luck. So, I added a new thing to the stream. I added in Grumpy Dungeon Master Panda's idea of having the 8-ball.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Pay for the 8-ball.
Pay for the 8-ball. Oh, wow. 20. So somebody invoked it last night when one of the characters missed an attack. And they invoked the 8-ball, and I rolled it and I said, your 5 has become 1.
See, you got an 8-ball that's actually a D20, but could, you know, it'd be a kind of a cool idea to make a tabletop game that is played with the actual Magic 8-ball. Hang on. List of Magic 8-ball ball answers. There we go. I wanted to see what it actually says. Let's see. So yeah, just imagine if you're running a tabletop game, and every time somebody rolls, you know, it'll roll and or come up with it is certain, or you shake the magic 8-ball. Sorry, not roll it. But it is certain. It is decidedly so, without a doubt. Yes, definitely. You may rely on it. As I see it, most likely. Outlook good. Yes, and signs point to yes. Like those are all sort of positive answers for the outcome. Then you have the sort of neutral ones. Reply hazy, try again. That sounds like a re-roll to me. Ask again later, better not tell you now. Cannot predict now, concentrate and ask again. And then you have the obvious failures of don't count on it. My reply is no, my sources say no. Outlook not so good and very doubtful.
I didn't know that the die inside the magic 8-ball was a D20.
I actually never knew that either. I've seen, like, a friend of mine had a magic 8-ball when I was a kid. You could just shake it, but I only remembered like 4 or 5 answers. I did not remember, like, this one actually has 20 listed.
Right. What does it look like on the inside? Because that die is shaped very oddly.
Well, the magic 8-ball is a fucking ball. It's not a die.
No, there's a die on the inside.
Oh, yeah, it's just a triangle. I have no idea how that thing fucking works. I'm not going to sit here and read off how this thing works right now. I'm on Wikipedia. No. Somebody can look this shit up.
So it is actually a D20. It's just a very small D20, and it's magnified through the lens, and it just has all like the text raised, so when it floats up to the top, it pushes all the blue ink out of the way, so the blue is not there. Huh. And it has letters show up, so it's actually a very small D20. That's interesting.
That's kind of neat.
Yeah. Well, it's 2 inches. Well, inch. No, it's about an inch. It's the size of a D20. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this would work for like a Cthulhu-style game or something like that.
Yeah, that works.
Just because it gives you, you know, very vague answers some of the time.
Will Cthulhu eat us?
Signs point to yes.
7. Okay. So I actually got a topic for us to talk about a little bit.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now that we've delayed and proven me wrong multiple times.
Well, so much of what you've already talked about kind of ties into this whole thing anyway, so go for it.
So I've been asked multiple times this week from multiple different players, most from Adventures League or from outside of Adventures League, basically asking is like, hey, how do I start being a dungeon master? And it took me a while to respond to the first one because I don't really know how to start dungeon mastering other than just like, hey, buy the starter set, jump right into doing it, have some friends, don't fear making mistakes. You know, that's my basic guidance right there, you know?
So let's start at the beginning kind of our own journeys. I think okay. That's a good way to sort of help people understand how to become a dungeon master. So with yourself, how did you begin with role-playing games, D&D, and then how did you become a dungeon master? Because your path was probably different from mine.
More than likely. So for me, it was simply, I was listening to Chris Perkins play 4th edition with Acquisition Incorporated. I liked what was going on. I wanted to play Dungeons & Dragons. I bought the red box for 4th edition, which had a very standard adventure and a set of DM dice. And I convinced a bunch of people to come out and play 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons with me. It was like 2 or 3 players, maybe 2 to start with. Mm-hmm. And I just started from there and ran the box adventure from the starter kit.
So were these people you knew? Or
They were friends of mine, yeah. Okay. And they were all like, 4th edition sucks. Okay, cool, yeah. But it's what I bought. Can you want to come play? And they're like, well, no one else will play with me, so yeah. So yeah. Eventually I got a grip of like 4 to 5 people. It was semi-inconsistent, but they were coming out and playing nonetheless, and I had a lot of fun, and I kind of just played through the main campaign of 4th edition, you know, making some stuff up as I went, and mm-hmm. just buying a lot of the modules and reading a lot of the stuff and going from there. I never read the Dungeon Master Guide. That was my resolution for 2021, and I failed it, by the way. I didn't even crack open the book.
Have you even looked at the 5th edition one?
No, I haven't. I have not.
So what you are telling all people looking to be a Dungeon Master is that you don't need the DM's Guide. That's what you're saying.
You really don't need the DM's Guide, because I would say the Dungeon Master Guide is great for if you are trying to build a campaign in the Faerun, okay, or one of the associated official D&D planes.
Build a campaign as a sort of generic setting, yes.
Right. So, but when it comes to running an adventure as a DM, where you're pretty much just like the manager of the story, okay, and you're trying to basically get that story told, okay, you don't need the Dungeon Master's Guide. You just need that adventure book, you know. You could pull Icewind Dale right off the shelf, flip it open to chapter 1, and start right there.
As long as it has all of the magic items in that module, like tells what those magic items do, yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah. I mean, the DM's Guide is reference material for like, oh, I want to roll on the treasure chest table. Where is that? I only have one tab of my DM's Guide tabbed, and that's the loot table. Because that's all I've ever used the DMG for, is generating random loot.
I mean, it does have pretty extensive random encounter tables as well.
Yeah. But like I said, it doesn't tell you, it doesn't teach you the fundamentals of running a game.
There's a lot of information in there. As you've never read it, you wouldn't know this. There's a ton of information in there on creativity. And how, you know, kind of what you said, how to build campaigns. The specifics of running, I don't think it can write a book about that.
Right.
There's just sort of general rules that other people tell you or that you learn through trial and error.
In part 3, there's chapter 8, which is called Running the Game, which is setting up table rules, mm-hmm. how to roll dice, what ability scores are, how exploration works, social interaction, objects, combat, chases, siege equipment, a bunch of other stuff. Yeah. Now, I think that's better explained in the player's guide, and I have read the player's guide.
I would hope so, Lord.
The Player's Handbook, though, to me, is a much better source to start with if I want someone to read, get into D&D specifically. Because that basically tells you how characters are created, what they are. Because all everything you have with creating a character applies to creating an NPC, essentially.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And no, how you interact with the world is the same with any monster or NPC you would make. The same rules apply to them as applies to the players. So you don't need to rehash that in the DM in the Dungeon Master's Guide on how to run an NPC. You're just creating a player and you're running with it.
Yeah, so, the player's handbook is it's a must. Yeah. It is absolutely a requirement. The monster manual, it's very useful, but you feasibly could run this game without ever looking at a monster manual.
Yeah.
Because the stats are just stats. It's still strength, dex, con, and so forth.
When you get down to the breaking points of, like, you know, when monsters level up and stuff like that, and what proficiency a level 5 monster, CR5 monster has compared to a CR4, yeah, that nitty gritty really only applies to creating the game. If you're running Waterdeep, the monsters are already there. They're in the back of the book for you. So you don't need other ones. Granted, it will reference monsters from the Monster Manual and Volos and stuff like that, but it'll tell you when that happens. So you don't need to know those. They're just reference books. Mm-hmm. So, like, for me, when it comes to how do I get into dungeon mastering, it's buy the starter set, read through the starter set, and then find two friends and play the game with. You know, that would just be you and two friends.
For your first one, yeah, that's probably smart. My path was very, very different from yours. Mind you, I started D&D in 1990. So way the fuck back when. I was like a 15-year-old kid. And I'd known about D&D, but I had never seen it played. I didn't have any friends who played it, no relatives who played it. I had a relative who played it who I had met like once before and never played D&D with them. So for whatever reason, I'm at the mall. I see the red box. The real red box, not your 4th edition red box.
Hey, F you, my red box is just as good as your red box.
The basic Dungeons & Dragons red box. And I picked it up, took it home, read it. And I spent a few months just sort of running myself through this. I created the characters. I ran them through the little modules that were in there as more of a practice, you know.
I did do that too. I did actually take a group of PCs that I made as practice characters and ran them through the adventure.
Yeah. It's a useful thing to do because it's giving you an opportunity to play through the rules. And I did that for a few months on and off. And then I had one friend that I hung out with locally at the time. And I decided to run a game. So it was just me and him. And we did that for probably a year on and off. Then I moved. I met other friends, and then just sort of devolved from there, and I started running for other people. I ran for my brother and some of his friends. Then I started expanding out beyond just D&D at that point. And along the way, probably a year later, 6 months later, I bought the advanced D&D set, which is what you're much more familiar with. But I mean, it was just a thing of I bought it and then I learned how to do it by practicing with it. And then I did it. Yeah. And I have no doubt that the shit that I ran in the beginning was terrible. But when you're hanging out with your friends, especially friends who have never played D&D, who have never been around D&D, is any of it really terrible? Like, right. Yeah, you're just being creative, and as long as you and them are having fun, that's all that really matters. Now, people these days, they have access to things like Critical Role and Dungeon Run and all these other awesome shows. So they can sit there and watch it long before ever diving into it. So at least they'll have an idea of what this game is like.
Yeah. Speaking of that, too, like, I know I've mentioned this a few times where, like, I watched a lot of Chris Perkins when I first started. And I feel a lot of how I run my games is how Chris Perkin kind of runs his, where he has a big, huge, epic set, does very little build up to that set, just like, all right, you guys are right here. What do you want to do? You know, kind of thing.
Yes.
And kind of has this rectoractive, descriptive storytelling style to his, versus like Matt Mercer, who has a very big build up. You know, because he's a voice actor and an actor, you know, so he's got this much bigger build up and bigger kind of like surrounding world. And then he has players who are the exact same, do the exact same job that he does. So they build off of that and kind of have more social interaction kind of game.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still very kind of like miniature tabletop, like, and that's how the story unfolds. So maybe it's just, you know, find a DM that you like to watch and model some of the stuff off of what he does, but understand that you have to learn what your style is.
Yep.
And then go from there. And, you know, if you can have experienced DMs play with you as players, they can give you some pointers, you know, but a good DM would know that just, you're just going to play how you're going to play, you know?
Yeah. What one big difference between how you started and how I started though, is the modules and the campaigns. And we've definitely talked about it before. But you started, and you said it, you pretty much just, when you ran for your friends, you just ran the modules that were in front of you. Whereas me, I still, to this day, have never run a module other than Icewind Dale. Yeah. Like, not everything I've ever done has been me creating the system, creating the world. Like, I've only ever done homebrew.
Right. And that's where the DM's guide actually steps in and helps out a lot, is how to build that homebrew world. Like I said, yeah. I would definitely say run a module, run the starter set. Phandelver is one of the best written, well-balanced, challenging yet easy campaigns they've ever written.
Now, I have run lots of campaign settings. I've run Forgotten Realms. I've run Dark Sun. I've run Dragonlance. But I've never run modules in them, you know, with Dragonlance specifically, because I have better memories of that one. You know, I set it during a specific time period of Dragonlance, because it sort of goes in different ages, and I ran a thing. It's basically, think of it as going on during Star Wars Empire Return of the Jedi, and mine is just a little side mission that's going on that does not involve any of the main characters. So, you know, in Dragonlance, you had the a lot of major characters during that time period. Sturm, Brightblade, Raistlin, you know, Caramon, all of these major characters that novels have been written about. All the shit I was running was taking place during that same time period, but I had no involvement with them. Anyway, that's my thoughts on it. You can kind of run whatever you want. Modules are definitely an easier way to get started, and there's nothing wrong with running modules. If you find that's not giving you what you want, then go out, learn to build your own campaign. Run it in Forgotten Realms if you like Forgotten Realms so much, but there's a lot of information out there that is not touched in the current modules.
Yeah, and you know, it's a big daunting task to like okay, I'm going to run something in Faerun, and like, all the lore that's previously existed, and all the lore that currently exists, and all the stuff that's currently going on. And Blizzard, WotC has come out and said that nothing in the past matters, nothing in the future matters. It's just your game and what you're playing now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of resources online where you can get information on stuff. But again, when it comes back to just starting to run the game, just find some friends, pick up a starter kit, run that campaign in the starter kit, have fun, make a lot of mistakes, and then just kind of like see how it all unfolds. And if you have players that are, you know, super critical and just mean to you because, oh, you're a new DM and you're not playing like Matt Mercer or anything like that, just find different players. And that's that aspect of being a DM is probably pretty much the hardest part, where finding good, consistent players who fit and like your style and will give you the benefit of doubt when you mess up, and also kind of let you explore and kind of do some things. Because if your players won't let you grow, you can't get better. And your players aren't going to grow and get better unless the you're also getting better. So you got to find a group that you all can kind of fail and keep playing. Every single time. Yeah.
It's why I suggest starting with friends. Yeah. I don't suggest hopping online and being like, hey, guys, who I don't know in these random D&D groups. I'm trying to find a group to run, because then you're introducing yourself to people who you don't know their dynamic and they don't know you. So, things that you say and or do might not fit what they want, and vice versa. It's better to start this out with people that you are already comfortable with. Once you have a little experience, then sure, expand outward.
Yeah.
But it's much safer and much easier in the beginning with people you're good friends with. Because they'll let you do and say shit that other people might not.
I guess the only other piece of advice I can give too is play the game a few times first too. Know what strength is, what strength does, know what dex does. Don't be calling for know the difference between when to call for a perception check and when to call for an investigation check. They're very two distinct things, and people get them confused a lot. So
even experienced DMs confuse the shit out of those.
Right. And on top of that, just like I said, even if you make the wrong call, a player that's a good player would just go, all right, and just kind of go with it that way, because that's what the DM said. And ultimately, you're the one running the table and running the game. So being a player first too will help you understand what it's like to kind of have that perspective for a little bit, and it will help you understand how combat works and all that. And once you know how combat works, and you know how the social interactions work, and you know how making skill checks work by being a player, that all just applies for being a DM. You're just doing it with seven goblins versus the table.
Yeah. One thing that we haven't mentioned, because you said start with a module, and I absolutely agree with that. But you mentioned Phandelver as being an easy one. I would probably rather pull something off of DM's Guild that's for level one to level one characters.
That's what Phandelver is.
Okay, is that what Phandelver is? I thought Phandelver was a whole campaign.
No, it's 1-5.
Okay, so it is a campaign. It's a short campaign, but
yeah.
For your first one, I would truthfully just a level one module. You could Yawning Portal. Yawning Portal has one that's I'm not saying to use Yawning Portal. I'm pointing out that it has modules that are for just a level one group.
Yeah, the first adventure, the first fight from level one to two in Phandelver is you meet a guy at a bar. There's a social interaction. You have that kind of go off. He hires you to basically escort supplies to Phandelver because they're not making it there. There's a goblin ambush. By the way, this is the same setup for the fourth edition. There's a goblin ambush along the road. You chase the goblins to the Kragmaw cave. And in there, you fight a bunch of goblins, you fight a bunch of wolves, then you fight a bugbear, and then you make it to Phandelver. And that's the entire first level thing. And it's like I said, it's the same setup as the fourth edition one, except in the fourth edition one, you saw a black knight on the road at the very end. And in this one, you wind up in a town where there's bandits everywhere.
That sounds straightforward enough.
Yeah, it's straightforward enough. It is the one meant to bring you into fifth edition. And I think they actually set it up specifically too, because there's wolves in that Kragmaw den. And do you know what the wolf hit die is?
I have no idea. Probably a D8 or a D10.
It's a D8. And guess how many hit points your average first level player has?
I would imagine 8.
It is 8. So it is set up in a way that you may get your first TPK in your very first DM session, because those two wolves will just eat them alive. It's very possible, but and when you think about it, that's just the life of an adventurer.
Yeah, especially at first level, where everything, where a fucking goblin can one-hit you. Even a barbarian, even a barbarian is a two shot for a goblin at level one.
Yeah, there's a goblin. Like when you sneak up on the if you sneak up on the cave, you meet some goblins outside around a campfire. One of them's wearing a pot on his head. Then you just jump them and kill them. I have a lot of fun. Phandelver's really great. I actually wanted to kind of like scale it up and run like a level 5 starting Phandelver campaign, like Phandelver on hard mode, mm-hmm. you know, and just see how crazy that could get. That's been one of my ideas for a while.
Wouldn't be that hard to do, I wouldn't imagine. Just restat some of the monsters.
Well,
maybe add a few monsters here and there.
Yeah, maybe yes, maybe no. Fighting goblins is—it's hard to upstat them to 5. But I don't want to just upstat them. I want like to maybe even change them in the encounter. So like, when you encounter this big monster at CR 6 later on in the campaign, okay, well now he's a CR 20. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe that like Noloth that's in that one cave near the end is now something much badder, bit bigger and badder, you know. So,
but well, there you go.
Again, that's some general advice. And
yep. Start with Phandelver.
If you need me to, I'll buy you a kit. They're like $10, so they're cheap. Hand them out. Here's your first set. I'll play the first game with you, and I will die. Because I'll be a wizard, and I'll run, and a wolf will bite me, and I'll just die.
Yeah, you'll die because you don't know spells. We've already determined that.
You'd pull nothing. I forgot that you could shield magic missiles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, it's like, is it mage armor? No. Is it mage hand? No. I was like, damn, what's that spell? I can't remember. Magic missile. No.
Yeah, nobody uses shield to stop magic missiles. Everybody's used shield for +5 armor class.
I knew that it did, but I forgot the spell and I couldn't find it on the quick list there. It was just like, well, I'll just eat them.
Yeah, because you were probably just thinking, oh, shield just gives +5 AC.
No, I knew that shield did. I just couldn't remember it was the shield spell. Like,
okay.
It's like you ever like get up to go to the bathroom or like, how do I go to the bathroom? Like you just forget.
No.
And then, like, you walk into the kitchen instead, and you're like, oh, shit, I have to go to the bathroom. And then you run out to the bathroom.
Oh, I forget what I'm in the process of doing every single day, all the time. I've never forgotten when I'm going to the bathroom.
Yeah. So, like, well, maybe you're not old enough yet.
another 30 years, maybe.
All right. Yeah, well,
another 30 years, I'm not going to get up to go to the bathroom. I'm just going to stay sitting where I'm at. That's what depends are for.
Anyways, if you're listening to this, the following upcoming weekend, we're going to be at Scarab in Columbia, South Carolina. If you're in the area or around the area, come by and visit. It's like $20 to come in to the con floor, wear a mask, I guess, and just, you know, be careful. But we'll be doing a live stream that Saturday night instead of normal stream. Yeah. I'll be running my Dread of the Ice Devil. You're in the game. You've made a PC for it.
Yeah, Gorgie Rotten Hand.
And I'll be streaming that. Hopefully it'll all work out and doesn't mess up, but you can come watch us perform this live for everybody, and it should hopefully be a lot of fun, and we'll give you a bookmark if you show up. Maybe some dice. I don't know.
Right. When I screw up on the rules while playing, I don't care. I don't want to hear from anyone except the DM.
You can tell Jay that he's wrong and how bad his advice is. And you can tell me how great I am. And I'll give you a free copy of Dread of the Ice Devil if you tell me I'm great. Yeah. All right. That's it. Goodbye, Greg.
Bye, Greg.
Wait. By Greg, is it Craig or Greg? I keep forgetting.
I don't know.
Have we hired a new intern yet?
Well, apparently our intern Giark left. So.
Are we sure he's not just on a quest? Did we like have him get coffee or something?
I don't drink coffee.
I'm southbound and down. All my rolls are crits. It's time for me to hit the bricks.